Hello. This is the Andy Social Podcast. My name is Andy, and this week's guest is Rodney Holder. Rodney Holder is a music business coach. He's been running his own podcast and website, Music Business Facts, for the past several years. He is an expert when it comes to music business and has been teaching music business studies at TAFE for almost 20 years now. And he's also known as the drummer for the legendary Australian metal band Alchemist. So for any Alchemist fans out there, you might want to go back and listen to episode 89 with Adam that I recorded out in Canberra about a month or two ago, probably a bit longer now. So be sure to go back and listen to that episode as well if you're a big Alchemist fan. So several weeks ago, I was up in Brisbane and I caught up with Rodney. We went to South Bank and sat on the grass and watched the world go by. And we spoke about, you guessed it, music business. And we just spoke about, I guess, some of the earlier beginnings, touching on some of the Alchemist days and what he's learned over the years, but also what he's been able to build for himself, his business, and where he wants to go in the future. I was quite surprised with some of the things that he is looking forward to doing in the years to come. We talk about the music industry as it stands now and some of his opinions and what bands should be doing. So if you're in a band, this is the podcast episode to listen to. I think you're going to get a lot of value out of this, especially if you're not aware of Rodney and what he's up to. Now, I'm going to have everything over in the show notes over at andysocial.net. So if you want to reach out to Rodney or check out his podcast, Music Business Facts, which is in all the places that you listen to podcasts, he also runs webinars and one-on-one coaching and all sorts of resources and tools and tips and tricks and everything like that. So be sure to dive in deeper and hopefully there'll be something there of value for you. Anyway, enough of all that. Here's my chat with Rodney Holder. How you doing?
Good, mate. It's good to see you.
Yeah, likewise. Not a bad day for it.
Oh, it's amazing. Look at this place.
So we're it's quite a few sights to be seen here. So where are we at the moment?
We're on the foreshore of South Bank Parklands in Brisbane, just on the man-made beach overlooking the city.
It's beautiful here. I was on Instagram before taking photos and throwing them online. I was saying it's been 12 years since I've lived here and I miss it. Every time I come back, I'm like, oh, I need to move back. And today's not helping that at all.
I can still remember the first time I came here.
Yeah.
And this is coming from cold, dark, grey Canberra winter. And I came up here and I walked past this place and I remember there was some beautiful young ladies topless just in the middle of the beach there. And I remember thinking, you're fucking kidding. This is the middle of the city and it's warm as warm as warm and there's beautiful ladies with their puppies out. This is amazing. I got to move here.
It's paradise. Yeah, that's it. We're moving. That's it. Oh, yeah. So you mentioned before it's been about, what, 13?
Yeah, so it's 13 years, pretty much this July. So just gone by, yeah.
What was the main reason?
That's a really good question. I actually followed a woman up here.
Yeah, okay.
So that was my excuse. But to be honest, there's a good backstory. I used to say to the guys in Alchemist all the time, let's leave Canberra, let's go somewhere, because I was born and bred there and I was just always sort of itchy to get out of here. I love Canberra. I would never bag it, but I always wanted to go somewhere a bit more sexy, like let's go to Byron Bay or let's go to Melbourne or let's go to we were recording back in those days in Backbeach Studios down in Victoria. Well, let's move to Brisbane. And that was like nah. And I was very close to my grandfather and he was on his deathbed and he sort of said to me, he goes, Rodney, your life, he goes, I can remember being your age and your life just goes so quick. You got to do what you want to do. And so, when I fell for this young lady, I was neck deep in the band. I'd been in the band about 16, 17 years. And I just thought, no, I got to do it. I got to get out of Canberra. Because I thought if I didn't, I'd just been offered a big job at the TAFE down in Canberra.
Yeah.
And I had this vision of me being 55 and getting the golden handshake and of never having left the town. So
that's it. Still driving around roundabouts and
yeah. And there would have been nothing wrong with that, but I think also Brisbane has just opened up my horizons and there's been a lot more opportunities here. Oh, yeah. And you know, it's just so
well in the last you moved here about a year or so before I moved out and moved to Sydney. And every time I come back, like straight away, like within 6 months, 12 months, 5 years, the city's changed so much. And
definitely.
There's been so much money pumped into it. And yep. there's been, you know, whether it just be the infrastructure or just opportunities, and even just walking through things like Queen Street Mall and South Bank and all the cafes, and it's just, it's amazing here. It's just fantastic. And I used to remember growing up here thinking that Brisbane was just so boring, and now I'm like, oh man, I need to move back. This is fantastic.
Yeah, well, I think, I mean, I've seen it myself in the time I've been here, and it's just, you see the city's growing up,
yeah.
you know, it's sort of becoming a real internationally renowned, reclaimed city in its own
absolutely,
right.
Absolutely.
Mm.
So being here in Brisbane, you're still teaching at the TAFE?
Yeah, so I'm very lucky. I had this dream job in Canberra. Yeah. Everyone thought I was crazy to leave, and I managed to pull it off again here in Brisbane. I'm the head of music business studies at South Bank TAFE, or TAFE Queensland. We've just had a rebranding. So
I know a few people have been through the courses there.
Yeah.
So
any reviews on my teaching?
Well, no, not personally. No, I haven't had any personal reviews on you yourself, but yeah. That's positive feedback on what they've learnt and been exposed to. And it seems to be, I was talking to Tim Price the other day, who's doing PR and marketing for a lot of bands, and we're talking about the fact that, I mean, this is your neck of the woods right here, but talking about the lack of music business awareness that a lot of bands have.
Totally.
And in the last few years where everyone's embraced the DIY aspect,
mm-hmm.
but they've almost gone from one extreme to the other, where they think that DIY has become everything,
mm-hmm.
and like in his instance, he couldn't outsource to a PR agent, or he couldn't outsource to somebody else because you should be doing everything yourself,
mm-hmm.
and you lack the expertise of being able to be able to really sort of excel in a business point of view.
Mm-hmm.
So you've got a bunch of guys that don't have a lot of business experience, and they won't invest time into things such as getting a qualification or understanding the industry from a business point of view.
Sure.
So I'm sure you see a lot of that.
Oh, absolutely.
When people first come through.
Yeah.
And start up.
I don't think it's changed, Andy. I think, you know, I think musicians are such passionate people about their art. That's at the forefront, and so it should be.
Yeah.
But you would know this, and I think back on my own music career, the mistakes you make because you didn't know, you didn't have the knowledge, or you didn't have the foresight to think about what if, or, you know, and really simple stuff too, like, you know, just basically, you know, what's a contract? What's a legal agreement? How does that work? How does copyright work? I mean, co-writing agreements with your bandmates and putting that into some kind of written format, or understanding, you know, the basic premise of a record label or music publishing, or, you know, how to write a marketing plan, or setting goals and working out how to reverse engineer backwards with a business plan to make them actually really happen. And, you know, everyone has the dreams of being rich and famous, or at least, you know, I did.
Mm.
But you just thought someone else was going to come along and take care just of all that. You just have to do the music.
Do you find that a lot of the people that first start up in these courses, are they predominantly people that want to become managers, or are they musos themselves that they want to get a bit more of an expertise?
It's a pretty good mix.
Yeah.
So you've got, most of them are quite young.
Yep.
You know, I have had some older students. I've had, you know, students in their 60s and stuff, but predominantly they're sort of 19, 20, 21.
Mm-hmm.
And they're either a musician that's cruising along and they've got the chops and they're really, you know, they're doing something great, and they want to not get ripped off, and they want to have a bit more of a grounding and understanding of how the industry and the business works. Or there's somebody that's passionate about the industry but don't have any musical skills and that want to get into entrepreneurship, whether it be artist management or concert promotion or, you know, touring or starting a label or starting some kind of... A lot of them are coming now with in their business plans that they've got ideas for apps and,
yep.
you know, software and stuff. So, yeah, it's a bit of a mix, but it's great. It's so inspiring.
The bigger picture.
Yeah.
It's amazing. I mean, the possibilities are endless, really. And I think a lot of people sort of initially just think, oh, well, you know, it's to learn how to manage a band and how to make your band grow. But mm-hmm. I think there's so many other things now in the digital age where the opportunities are endless now from an out-of-the-box perspective.
Oh, totally. As a training organisation, you know, we're struggling to keep up with the rapid rate of change because, you know, if you read any of the textbooks, that's Not most, but a lot of that stuff's out of date, you know, after it's been printed. So, which, you know, takes me to my podcast, which has been such a great thing for me to be able to reach out to somebody who's absolutely an expert at what they're doing, you know, whether it be managing bands or putting on, you know, festivals or whatever, and just interrogating them, saying, look, tell me the facts. What do you do? How do you do it? What's the strategy? What do I need to look out for? And so it's been great having these, you know, really high level people just give you all that information, which then I can take to the classroom and say.
Was that a driving force or a driving reason as to why you started the podcast? Because I mean, from a career point of view and having a you know, employment and a job, it's, I mean, you're doing something you love. You're teaching a subject that you're passionate about.
Totally.
So there's obviously additional needs to have that want to be able to expand further and create a new platform to.
Yeah. Well, initially it was because, you know, I speak to my students for 40 weeks of the year.
Yeah.
And I knew they got sick of me. You know, you've told all your stories. You've given pretty much everything you've got to give. So I started bringing in some people in my network as guest lecturers.
Yeah.
And then I thought, well, I'll start filming these so then I can, you know, if they can't say yes next year, I can replay the tape.
Yeah, cool.
And then sort of a few people sort of who weren't doing the course sort of said to me, oh, do you reckon I could watch that interview that you did with so-and-so? And I said, yeah, sure, you know. And then I started thinking about podcasting and thought, well, obviously not everybody can do, you know, invest the time or money into doing a formal qualification. So I guess there was a... At the front of my mind, you know, I can do that and actually help people, which was a legitimate thought. But of course, yeah, there was also, you know, being a business teacher and being a guy that's, you know, fond of making money, I thought, well, maybe there's also a, you know, you could grow this into a business.
Extra
perhaps.
Revenue stream.
Yeah, totally, there. Yeah. Totally. So.
And especially using the principles of music business, being able to sort of maximize.
Exactly.
Maximize it.
You know, when I was playing in Alchemist, it used to be great because I'd say to my students, look, guys, I'm going to be away for 4 weeks because I'm going to Europe to play with Iron Maiden and, you know, Slayer. And when I get back, you know, I'll tell you all about it. So it was kind of this justification for why I was in front of them. And when the band finished and when Metal for the Brain finished and I didn't really have a real practical application of what I was talking about, I didn't want to be the teacher that was like, yeah, well, back in 2001, this is how I did it. So,
you got to stay relevant, I guess.
That's right, yeah.
You worry about these young guys going, Alchemist.
Exactly, yeah. Exactly. And so the podcast was, you know, I could say, well, listen, you know, like last weekend I spoke to whoever and, you know, he said this, you know.
Yeah.
And that's been a really great, amazing thing because it's for my own professional development. Like, seriously, it's been absolutely incredible because...
Yeah, I was going to say, you no doubt would have learnt a lot. I mean, I know from just doing this podcast and talking to people and it's amazing it's amazing who will agree to have a chat when you've got some microphones and willing to put the conversation out there. And I'm sure that you would have learnt a hell of a lot from all the different people that you've had on so far.
Pretty much every conversation.
Yeah.
Pretty much every conversation, someone... teaches you something,
yeah,
you know, whether it's about the world or about the industry or about, you know, and I've never been shy of just asking the questions I really actually want to know, so I figure if I really want to know them, perhaps other people do as well, and they've been some of the best podcasts in terms of the feedback that I've got. So
I think there's been a few that I've listened to on your podcast where you've asked about you know, money, and you've thrown the disclaimer at the start saying, look, you don't have to tell me if you don't want to, or, you know, I know it can be a touchy subject. And even I'm listening going, what are they going to say? Are they going to, you know, fight back and say, no, none of your business? But, you know, most of the time, if anything, worst case scenario, they just politely sort of work their way around the question. But most people are pretty cool. And, and you learn so much from these guys. And no doubt, I mean, for me, and I haven't quite got to that point where I'm talking to just, you know, the cream of the crop as far as from a music point of view, you know, internationally, but no doubt there'd be some nerves when you talk to. I mean, I listened to the one the other day. I was playing catch up with some of your episodes, and one with like Chuck Billy.
Yeah.
And I just thought, oh man, like I couldn't imagine just being on the phone. I'd just be a stuttering idiot trying to get a question out.
Look, Chuck Billy was a great one because I was a Testament fan, but not to the stage where I was really intimidated by him. Yeah, so it didn't help me back. But if you listen to me when I speak to Ace Frehley from Kiss, it was like,
I remember
oh shit. And the other thing was that John Howarth, who threw me the interview, he only gave me a few hours notice. He sort of said, oh, look, I can get you this.
Yeah.
And it's happening here. And I was like, so I had a really short amount of time to prep. And then Ace said something like, I really fucking hate the music business. I wish I didn't have to deal with it. I don't really want to talk about it. What's right, next? Yeah, and I'm like, here's my whole list of questions about business.
Oh, where am I going to take this?
Yeah. And so I think I had 15 minutes to talk with Ace Frehley from Kiss, and I think the interview went for 11 and a half or something. So.
But it's still entertaining. I thought it was great. But I mean, I can definitely imagine when someone throws a statement out like that and the name of your podcast is Music Business Facts. Yeah. It's just like, well, okay, where are we going to take this? How can we recover quickly?
Exactly.
But I mean, that's the gold in podcasting. It's so cool. I mean, I've got my little notebook and I write a few points down in the event that your guest becomes a one-word answer sort of conversation, or not a conversation, but just Q&A sort of thing. But even when those things happen and it's a train wreck, they end up being really exciting and great episodes to listen to from a listener perspective anyway. So it's good.
Yeah. And it's good to go back and listen to your earlier ones as well. And you go, geez, aren't they rough? Or maybe they're good. I listened to one today. It actually just came on into my iTunes, and it was the one I did with Paul Field, the Wiggles manager, which was one of my earlier ones. And I was actually thinking, I only listened to a bit, but I was like, yeah, that was all right. You sounded okay.
So. Oh, that's good. That's reassuring.
Yeah, it is. It is. So it's good for your self-development. It's good for your, your confidence. And like anything in life, you get better at it the more you do it.
Yeah,
so.
Have you found that by building an audience through the podcast that you've been able to find more opportunities?
Oh, definitely. You know, I get so many emails every week from people saying, you know, they're selling me about this great musician who's done all this. Am I interested in having them on the on the show? Or a couple of weeks ago, like, I got an email from the guitarist from Wasp, who I'd never heard of, saying, man, I love your show, I'd love to be on it. And, you know, so you get things like that all the time. And then outside of the podcast as well, you know, absolutely, people, they perceive you as this expert. Like, you know, I've had people say, oh, can you go over this contract for me? And I'm like, you know, I'm just like an ex-heavy metal drummer. I'm not like a lawyer or anything. And they throw you this, you know, long form Sony contract or something. But no, it's great. I really, you know, I get off on it. I love it, and I'm passionate about it. So,
did you ever have a vision when you sort of, I don't know, doing the podcast, and we'll get into like all the webinar stuff that you've been doing as well? But did you have this sort of expectation that you would hopefully get to a point where you become this key person in that particular field?
I guess if I'm honest with you, yeah. I mean, I compare it like being in a band a little bit, you know. You kind of got visions of wanting to be the next whoever being a somebody. And because mine's very niche, my podcast, or at least I perceive it to be, there's a lot of them springing up actually on the music industry studies. But that was one of my goals, to try and establish yourself as a bit of an authority in that particular niche. So that, you know, you're respected and that you're a go-to person for that type of thing. And
it's almost like from my perspective, looking at your podcast, I see your podcast as almost like a CV, resume, portfolio of work, just to highlight. I mean, you've got these guests on, but really, I mean, the guests are almost highlighting your knowledge and highlighting your credentials and your expertise, and you're not even providing the answers. You're just identifying the questions that are leading to the answers, and I think, whether that's been a conscious thing on your behalf, it's definitely a perception that, you know, you've created something where you've become this person of influence in this what you've said, a niche, and it is a niche, but it's a fairly large niche. Where, as you said, you've got people contacting you now saying, can you look over a contract, or can I have help or advice with this? So it's amazing. Like, I mean, I'm always blown away with the opportunities that can come out of something as simple as two people talking.
No, well, thanks for that. And that's all very true. But I'd just like to add what you said, as simple as, you know, you would know well that running a podcast regularly is a lot of hard work, you know.
I was going to ask. It's not you've only done one this year.
Yes. That's true. I've got about probably 20 in the bank.
Yeah.
So I've probably got about a few more coming. And But it was just literally a case of just the podcast was taking away from other opportunities.
Yeah.
So I had to make a decision. Okay, what am I going to do? Am I going to spend this half a day that I've got off editing and releasing the podcast, or am I going to follow up on these other opportunities that were immediately more kind of, well, if I'm being brutally honest, financially favourable. So
yeah, absolutely.
So yeah, I've wrapped it up at about 100 episodes, I think, that I've published, and I've probably got about another 20 plus just sitting in the bank. So I'm certainly not winding it up, but yeah, in terms of like what we were talking about, what you should do with a podcast and regularly putting content out, and yeah, it's just kind of taken a little bit of a backseat because I've had some other opportunities fall my way, which I think are more worth pursuing at the moment, at this point in time. Yeah,
and I think the cool thing about it is because it's self-managed, you're creating the rules.
Yeah,
so you can decide to focus attention elsewhere and put a break on it for the time being, or you can up the ante and increase the amount of content you put out. But it's purely up to you, and obviously the consequences of that, or whatever the results are going to be, is, you know, that comes down to the result of your decision, but you're making that decision. And I think that's so cool, because I talk to other guys that do podcasts and they freak out when they've missed a week or whatever.
Yeah.
And it's almost like you're employed by somebody else and that you have to answer to someone. It's like, no, you just answer yourself. Like, you've made that call. Don't worry about it. It's fine. You don't have to. It's always great if you can be consistent.
Yeah.
But if you can justify it and you've got other things that are viable and financially, you know, there's a financial incentive to do something else.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah. No, definitely. And I think also that I was pretty consistent for the first, you know, I guess 18 months to get to that sort of 100-odd episodes, which did build me up, you know, a pretty core group of people that followed me and listened to what I had to say. But the other amazing thing which I've discovered, and it continually amazes me, that, like you said, I've only released one. The numbers haven't really dropped off much. They still just have sort of ticked over with new people who discover it. And and so, yeah, it's like a nice little body of work that's just sitting there now for me, working passively and pushing, you know, some people my way. So it's, if you're listening to this and you... you're looking for a great arsenal in your marketing tools, you know, start a podcast. It's pretty good.
It's great because, this is the beauty of the internet and just digital content. You can create something, you can put it out there, and it might not get touched for 10 years. And then one little trigger, something pops up, and then the attention gets drawn to it, and then suddenly everyone wants to know everything about it. And so it's like the guys who do vlogs, and they do these daily vlogs on YouTube and get bugger all views, but then eventually they just have one that goes viral, and then suddenly everyone wants to go back and watch everything that they've done. And so if it's all monetized, you're laughing.
Yeah, exactly.
Crazy.
Exactly.
Crazy. But it's great that, you know, you can put it out there, and it becomes this library of knowledge, and people can go and listen to it, and it's still relevant. It's timeless in the sense that there's still core principles that can be applied no matter what changes in the industry.
Yep.
So
yep.
It's great. It's fantastic. Yep. Body of work.
Totally agree. Yeah, but like I was saying to you before, I've been thinking I'm going to start another one with a bit more of a different focus coming up. So like you touched on with me, my life is not all about music business, you know. It's I have many other interests, and so that's where my new podcast, which I'd like to start and do, is just speaking to people that have really inspired me.
Yeah, cool.
So that's where I'm going to be going with my next one. And
is that from a bit of a sort of a self-development angle, as far as just sort of learning sort of some tips and tricks from people that have influenced you? And
there's definitely that, absolutely. But I think the roll-on effect is that, again, if I speak to someone who I find really amazing and inspiring, or who's done something that has really changed my life or made me think, then chances are there's going to be someone else out there who hears that story and, you know, can resonate with that. And yeah, I'd be lying again if I said if I didn't want to sort of roll, you know, that into a future business type venture as well.
So. Absolutely. There you go. Well, I mean, the sky's the limit when it comes to that sort of stuff.
Yeah, totally. I mean, the main thing holding you back is your laziness and the amount of hours in the day to actually get it done. So.
Yeah, the time thing's a big one.
Yeah, it is a big thing.
And depending on how you want to do it, I mean, we were talking about this earlier as well, is that consistency of releasing content and building up that that audience of people, and, mm-hmm. and one thing that's a big driver to build an audience is having that consistency, you know, week in, week out, or fortnightly or monthly or whatever it might be that you choose. You've got to be you've got to be on the money and keep going. So that's a big, it's a big time investment.
Yeah, no, I totally agree. Totally agree.
So when you think about doing this early next year?
Well, yeah, I'm very lucky that I'm taking long service leave from my job.
Wow.
So I've got five months off.
Nice.
So I've got 5 months to pretty much do whatever I want. And so that starts in December this year, 2017. And my intention is to go pretty hard and just create something new. That's what I want to do, yeah.
Just smash out that content, get as much as you can do.
I've got my guests sort of already, like you were talking about, they're all sort of written down. Yeah. A couple I've already approached, so...
Okay, I'll watch that space then.
Watch that space, yeah.
going back to... from a music business point of view, and this is your niche, your area of expertise. In your days with Alchemist, were there certain things that you look back on now? Because from what you've told me, you sort of played the role in that band, not only musically being the drummer, but taking on a bit of that sort of managerial aspect and sort of running the business side of the band, or having a large part in that. Is there certain things that you sort of look back on now and go, oh man, like, I shouldn't have done that, or I could have done a better job, or are there things that you've learnt afterwards since becoming a bit more of a teacher rather than a doer?
Of course, Andy. Of course. But that's the beautiful thing with hindsight, isn't it?
Yeah.
I mean, I was really lucky to meet three other blokes that were just so passionate about doing music. And, you know, listening to you talk with Adam the other day about, you know... you were saying, I think, you know, guys just, that nothing was going to get in the way. No job, no woman, no, you know, nothing. It was just going to be music. And that's how we were for so many years, until I pretty much fucked it up by leaving. But, I played a leading role in the management side of it, because I was very, very passionate about it, you know. Yeah. I was the one that was, I can remember, as the other guys all did as well. I'm not saying that I did everything, because I certainly didn't, but... I can vividly remember, you know, not going out on a Friday night because I was at home sending up demo tapes to, you know, fanzines all around the world and saying, right, I'm going to spend all night writing letters and putting cassettes into post packs and sending them off, you know.
Times have changed a little bit.
Oh, absolutely, absolutely. But look, we could do a whole podcast on the mistakes that Alchemist made, and it would be a great learning experience even in today's new music industry. But absolutely, you know, we were so passionate about the music, we didn't have a clue about the business. That's at the start, at least. That was how it was. And so it would have been great. And I think this is one of the greatest values that I can give with either the podcast or even my diploma teaching, is that just helping people know, look, this is what you shouldn't do, in my opinion. You know, don't do this, or look out for this, or you need to be aware of this, you need to understand this, and that type of thing, whether it be, you know... signing contracts or licensing deals or who to give your rights to or agreements with people in general or negotiation techniques. I mean, I could really go on all day with it. Alchemist made some amazing mistakes, but that was part of our journey, you know. That's where all ended up where we got to. And you know, we far exceeded what I ever thought we'd probably actually ever really do, if I was honest with myself at the time.
And I'm sure that even those mistakes that were made over the years, I mean, you wouldn't be in the position that you are now without those events or those decisions being made, and your perspective and your attitude towards the business aspect of it and creating what you've created over the last sort of 10 plus years has no doubt been heavily influenced by some of those decisions that have been made earlier in the piece.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think it's why I'm still so passionate, because when I see a young person come to me and they're really into their music, and I hear their music and I go, wow, this kid's really talented, and they have no understanding at all about, you know, APRA or the PPCA or copyright or, you know, any of that stuff, just to be able to show them these really simple little things and they go, wow, I had no idea, you know,
little tweaks.
It just makes me feel like you're helping people, you know. You know,
is there a common thing that you see amongst people coming through the ranks that they're just missing?
Talent's a big one.
Talent?
Yeah. there's a lot of blogs about music business now, and a lot of, you know, podcasts and Facebook pages and Facebook groups, and it's one thing that a lot of people don't talk about, you know, but there's a lot of people out there that they've got all the knowledge and skills, but they're just not good enough, you know. So it might sound harsh, but it's pretty true as far as I'm concerned. And again, when I was 18, we weren't good enough either, in you know, in terms of the perspective of where we got to. But yeah, a lot of people, a real big one that I see is they think I'm pretty good, and they think it's going to happen really quickly. And if it doesn't happen within 2 years, there's something wrong with the system. You know, they're hard done by. They really expect it kind of like now.
Yeah, I mean, it's that. I mean, we could go down a rabbit hole on this one, but it's the sense of entitlement that that's here now, where we expect everything within a few seconds, a click of a tap of a button, or on your smartphone, and any bit of information that you want, you can get almost instantly. And so when that whole delayed gratification of working hard and the longevity and being consistent and working towards something, it's such a foreign concept to a lot of people these days, where you can get instant reactions from people by putting up a song or a video or something like that, and getting a reaction from people as soon as it's posted online, and you're using that as a gauge as to whether you should continue doing something or not.
Yeah. I mean, and I suppose also there's a lot more competition now too, you know. There's a lot more competition. I really think people are more talented now too, you know, because you would know well. I mean, I'm quite a bit older than you, but you would remember no doubt that, you know, the days of when you couldn't just go to YouTube to work out how to do something, you know.
Yeah.
I can remember listening to an album going, what the fuck's the drummer doing? And trying to work it out, whereas now you can just get on YouTube and someone just shows you, you know, step by step, this is how you do it. And that can then sort of multiply the speed of your learning, you know, and all that kind of thing. So maybe I contradicted what I just said, but I really do think, a lot of my students, they have potential, but maybe they're not at the point where they can really, they're not quite there yet.
Yeah, they're jumping the gun a little
bit. Or they think they're better than they are, and they expect it to happen, like, perhaps a little bit sooner than it should. And if it doesn't, they're not prepared to put the hard yards in. You know, they think, I've been doing this for 2 years, or 3 years, or 4 years, or 5 years. Go, well, wait till you've been doing it for 20, you know.
Is there any common myths that people sort of have when it comes to the music industry or music business? That, like, some of those initial questions when you first get started with a new class of people, and the hands go up, or they're pulling you aside after the first couple of classes.
Oh, yeah, I see what you're saying. Yeah, look, there are. I guess the one that springs to mind is, like, copyright, for instance. People go, oh, yeah, but I can sample, like, can I sample, like, 5 seconds of it, and it doesn't really matter what I do with it?
Mm.
Or, you know, that's a common one. And you say, well, yeah, you can. I mean, you can pull out your sampler and do whatever you want. Mm. No one's going to give a shit until, you know, you're number one on Triple J Hottest 100, and then someone's going to come after you and say, well, you never asked to sample that.
Yeah.
But it's only like 3 seconds, or it was only a snare drum, or it was only whatever. And so that's a common one. Another common one is, if anyone ever stole my music, I'd just sue them, you know. I'd just, you know, I'd go and lawyer up, and they'd be fucked, you know. And it's like, well, yeah, you could try, but, you know, A, can you afford a good lawyer to do that? And B, you know, you can't get blood out of a stone, is one of my cliches I always say. If they've got no money, then so. But I think it comes back to, you know, these people, it's great to see they're so passionate. They're so passionate about their art and their music, and they all convinced, well, not all of them, but many of them are convinced they're going to be the next big thing, which I think is great. You need to have that.
Have you had any particular sort of success stories that come to mind from some of the students that have come through over the years, that have gone on to do other things?
Look, I have, absolutely. Probably the biggest one was Amy Shepherd from Shepherd, who's one of my students.
Yeah, well.
So, you know, I often talk to my kids here in Brisbane who I say, you know, you've heard of Shepherd? They go, yeah, and they roll their eyes, but you can roll your eyes all you like, you know, like, they're touring the world, they're doing it, they're making bucks, they've won arias, they're, you know, they got a behemoth in Chug as their manager pushing them, and, you know, she was just a young kid with a dream, and but she was also a really hard worker, and, you know, she had that original talent as well, and got a lucky break early, so she's the poster child for TAFE, being Amy Shepherd, but there have been definitely others, but not to that sort of degree. You know, I had a student who's coming and guest lecturing next week, because he started his own booking agency. And his booking agency came about from one of the assignments that I got him to do.
Yeah, right. Okay.
And, you know, he told me last... He said he's broke as fuck, but last year his business turned over $1 million, you know? So you got stories
okay.
like that. So, but I think the greatest myth, probably, while it pops into my head, is that, you know, a lot of it's smoke and mirrors, and most people, even if they're perceived to be successful, they're not making much money. There's
yeah.
very few that are sort of... you know, sort of jumping through where they're really sort of going, right, well, I'm going to buy myself a nice couple of houses and a sports car.
It's, that's, I mean, that's a whole other conversation around marketing. I mean, the wonders of marketing, especially with social media now, you can make yourself out to be whatever the hell you want, and you can convince people as well. And it's,
yep.
and if you do it right, well, I was going to say with the right intentions, but it doesn't matter whether you've got the good or bad intentions. If you do it right, then you can be extremely successful doing it. It might not have longevity, but you know, that whole perception of visually and depicting a certain lifestyle or whatever, and music is can be seen as a glamorous part of life. You know,
totally.
And if you work in the entertainment industry, then obviously for a lot of people that aren't associated with it, they see it as a glamorous thing.
Yeah.
So there's a lot of myths around that. And I mean, I'm sure you're the same when you first got started in a band, and then you're working a 9-to-5 job as well, and someone asks you about what you do on the weekend, you say, I play in a band. They're like, oh, cool. Do you play covers? Or have you got a demo? Or, you know, so there's all these sort of myths around music itself. But some people do a really good job of that smoke and mirrors, and really sort of putting up a successful front.
Well, look, I think it's an important part of it. I think, you know, if you're talking about the mass public, I think, who don't know the truth, if you're an artist, I actually think it's a good strategy to try and make yourself look bigger and more successful than you actually are.
Yeah.
Because I actually think that if you can convince others that you're as good as you think you are, that's the first step of actually probably getting there.
There's a bit of psychology behind it as well. I mean, I see this written a lot of books where it's that self-talk to yourself as well, where
Absolutely.
If you're already talking about doing something that's successful, you haven't quite got there yet, eventually it'll become a reality because it becomes your world. It becomes everything that you're thinking about. So there's probably some method to the madness there.
I'll do a little name drop.
Yeah.
But when I interviewed Michael Browning, who's the AC/DC's manager, he said completely that. He said when we started with AC/DC, the first thing was already thinking that we were the biggest band on the planet, and we just sort of had to convince everybody else that we were right.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
It's amazing. And I think that's a hard thing in Australian culture, and I've said this, and everyone who listens to this podcast will probably hear me rattle on about this in the last few episodes, but tall poppy syndrome. And I think in Australia, well, it's probably just the Western world in general, but especially in Australia where the tall poppy syndrome is so prevalent, and so people are a little bit reluctant to boast about something or boast about how great they are or what they want to become because they're worried about being cut down by peers or other people around them. So that getting the right mindset up front to be able to say things like that, where you go, well, we will be the biggest band in the world, or we are, and we're going to work towards it, and we're going to convince people. A lot of people probably wouldn't get to that stage because it just seems too, for a lack of a better word, wanky, over the top.
Yeah, sure. Well,
arrogant.
I would say that you should think that and you should work towards that, but I would say don't tell anyone.
Don't
that.
Tell anyone? Yeah,
no,
there's the key.
There's the key. Because you're right. If you come out and say we're going to be the biggest band in the world, you're setting yourself up from, you know, massive criticism.
Very hard to convince people then.
Whereas if, you know, you become the biggest band in the world or the biggest band in the state or the city or the whatever, you know, that speaks for you. You don't have to say anything.
Actions speak louder than words, and some of these cliches keep coming back. And
it's true, isn't it?
That's why they keep saying that. Yeah, absolutely.
I mean, look at Parkway Drive, you know? I can remember them sending me a demo to play Metal for the Brain, and, like, think about it. Who's a bigger band from Australia than Parkway Drive? And I did a live event a few months ago with Graham Nixon, their manager, and just the nicest guy you'll ever meet.
Yeah.
And so unassuming, yet, you know, I went and saw them here in Brisbane at the River Stage. They had like 6,000 people seeing them play.
It's
like,
it's ridiculous, that band. I mean, that's that. There would be some guys. I think Luke in that band's pretty active as far as the mechanics behind the band.
Yeah, well, Graham, their manager, said if Luke wasn't in Parkway, he would be the ultimate manager.
Yeah, right.
In his own right.
I've had him on my list and stayed on as well. I'll get there eventually. Yeah. But I'm really fascinated with that band because they've been able to really sort of pump that band up to this level, which is just, I mean, I saw some videos of them the last European tour, and they're just the pyrotechnics and the size of these venues that they're playing, you just go,
totally.
Is this the same band that started off on a little street and a little drive in Parkway and in Byron Bay?
Totally.
That's incredible.
If you listen to some of their later songs on that last record,
I was quite impressed, actually.
Their studio, like their stadium songs.
Yeah. They've written them. It's almost like they've consciously, well, they probably have. They've probably consciously written them for that.
So that the guy 100 rows back can join in the chorus and scream together. Yeah, totally.
It's very Metallica-esque in parts. It's pretty cool.
But really hooky and catchy. Yeah. And again, those guys are so cool. They're not, you know, they're not trying to be anything they're not. They're just who they are. And
I think that last album, they've managed to win over the guys who are like, oh, I don't like Parkway Drive because of whatever persona they put out there, and then suddenly they hear a song and go, oh, actually it's not that bad after all, like I might actually go and see them next time. So suddenly you've got that crossover appeal.
Or even if they don't like the music, you know, you've just got to admire them, I think.
Oh, absolutely.
It's just like, you know.
Well, that did you see their documentary from, I don't know, 5 or 6 years ago?
Yeah.
Where they just, I think their first European tour, they just booked shows as they went, and they were in a van, they were sleeping on the beach and like a shipwreck.
Amazing. Amazing.
Incredible. I mean, that's something that if people haven't watched that, they should definitely watch it as far as getting some dedication, some DIY aspect in a band.
Absolutely.
Throwing their all into it.
Yes, I can. I could sit here and talk about Parkway all day. I love that band.
So the webinar side of things, how does that work, and how's that from a? Tell me how much money you make from webinars.
But shitloads. Shitloads.
But how much of a success has it been? Because obviously, as you said, this year you've put more of a focus on some of that other online content and a lot of sort of interactive content with listeners and your audience. So how successful has it been?
It's been amazing. Like, seriously, it's been incredible. It's like, you know, I'd put all this effort into the podcast and I loved it. I was doing it because I wanted to. I wanted to build the following and all that stuff we talked about. But when I was introduced to webinars and I did the webinar, which was very similar to a podcast, really, except maybe a bit more structured. But, I mean, that ties perfectly in with what I do teaching anyway. So you're sort of delivering a lesson online. And at the end, then you just make an offer. So rather than having a... it does two things. With the podcast, you don't tend to get everybody's email address who listens to you. So you can't have that direct communication with them. Whereas with the webinar, you can. And then when the podcast finishes, it's kind of over. Whereas when the webinar finishes, you can say, hey, hope you really got something out of that. And that's the purpose of the webinar, to really give some value. But then at the end of it, say, and if you'd like to... explore the content or the topic any further, I'm making this offer. And you don't do it every single webinar, but if you've got a really compelling offer to say to people, well, listen, if you like this, we're going to go into this in a lot further, a lot more detail, and we're going to charge you this amount of money, what I've found is that a portion of people go, fuck yeah, I'll take that up.
Nice.
Which then enables you to continue doing what you're doing, you know, because like I said, with the podcast off, I was getting people sending me emails going, oh, amazing, thank you. I did end up in the latest few episodes setting up a PayPal Me account.
I had that written down because I was going to ask you about that.
Yeah, and you know what? It's amazing because, like, I'll just be sitting there and my phone will buzz and, like, $20. Someone's just listened to it and said, hey, I listened to that episode. I got a lot out of it here. Have $20, you know?
Yeah, I've seen a lot of other podcasts use a similar sort of concept, and I've always toyed with it. But I think for what you do, and because it's very focused as far as a topic is concerned, it's niched, and you're providing knowledge and content, it's a lot more justified. But when you mentioned that in that episode, I went, huh, okay, interesting. So it's great. So it's obviously working. It's providing a little bit of extra on the side.
It's beer drinking money.
Yeah, cool. I love it. Perfect.
But also being a music business niche, you know, like artists could do that. That's in fact, that's one thing in my, because I've also got a consultancy business.
Yep.
And I tell them, and a lot of artists, they say, I can't do that. And you go, well, you know, they think, oh, it's begging or it's, and look, if you're providing value to people and people are into what you're doing, what I've learned is that they're happy. Some people will be happy to throw you a bone.
I guess it's how you deliver it, yeah. How you present it to people, and the frequency of mentioning it and certain things. So, you know, if you've got a podcast in particular, it's probably not worth mentioning it or doing the hard sell on every single podcast, but then just referencing it every once in a while. And then if it's on your website and you've got traffic already going to your website anyway, then you don't have to do the hard sell.
Yeah.
Because people can just visually see that there's a function there to do it.
Yeah.
And I think most people understand what it is as well, so you don't have to sort of explain yourself now as much as probably what you used to, you know, a few years ago.
Yeah, I think also for me, like we talked about when we first start thinking about doing a podcast, you're really nervous about putting yourself out there.
Yeah.
And towards the end of after 100 episodes, I just thought, well, fuck it, I don't care. No matter what I do, someone's going to badmouth me and say something. So I may as well just try these things and see what sticks and what doesn't. And, you know, if someone goes, you're a capitalist fuckwit, well, you're right, I am.
If anything, I always say, if you've got people complaining about what you do, then you're doing something good, I think.
Yeah,
people are
right.
Willing to invest that energy to tell you how much they don't like whatever decision you've made or whatever product you're pushing or service that you're pushing, then there must be some substance behind it. There must be something good that you're doing.
Yeah, I reckon you're right. I reckon you're right.
There you go.
Like being in a band, you know? As soon as you get on stage or you release a song, someone's going to tell you how bad you are.
Oh, absolutely. I love it when, from our point of view in the band, you've got people online just bagging the shit out of us. And I think that's fantastic because you're bringing attention to our band.
Exactly.
It's great. I mean, it's another cliche. All publicity is good publicity, I think.
Yep.
You know, and I'm sure there's probably exceptions to the rule, but overall, it's great. If people are talking about you, then it's fantastic. And I think there's a lot of bands that really sort of capitalise on that aspect about
being
controversial as well. And
oh yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I mean, it's a great convention to get attention, isn't it? Being controversial.
Well, actually, on that topic really quickly, to get your opinion on it. So there's been a lot of bands over the years, and especially more recently, where it seems that people are trying to cut in really quickly into people's attention span.
Mm-hmm.
So with, you know, phones and, you know, being able to click and change and swap tracks and listen to whatever you want at whatever time, you don't... It's not the old concept of going to a record store and paying $30 for an album and being forced to like it after a while because you have to get the value out of it. Now you can just, like, download stuff free, stream stuff, listen, pay for things individually. There's a lot of bands now that are trying to cut through that by having some sort of novelty, some sort of gimmick.
Yeah.
Is probably the best word I think of. From a longevity point of view, do you have any controversial opinions on any of that? Or
look, I do. I mean, I talk about it a lot in marketing. I mean, look at Kiss, look at Alice Cooper, look at Marilyn Manson, look at any of those shock bands, look at Burzum, look at, you know. If you can do something that, like you said, pisses people off or makes them do a double take or, offends them or inspires them or anything, if you can get some sort of any emotional response, what you've got is you've got that brief second for them to maybe check out your music.
Yeah.
And then if you don't have the goods to back it up, then you're probably just going to be a fleeting, you know, occurrence. But, you know, if you've got good songs and you get that attention, I actually think it's a good thing. Why not? You know, but you do run a risk. Like, you know, if you've got to have, I think, your finger on the pulse of what is cool or what is not going to make people just think you're a joke and, you know, all that sort of stuff.
Do you think it's more important now for people to be considering those sort of things as far as from a theatrical, aesthetic, visual point of view, that's become even more...
It's quite a party going on behind us here. 1, 2, 3, 4. Someone's going to be spewing tonight, I reckon.
Yeah. do you think it's probably more important than ever for bands to be considering sort of the image as well as...
Absolutely. Absolutely. I think an image is a word where people think, you know, I've got to wear makeup and, you know, get my boobs out or whatever. Which is not. Image is everything, in my opinion. Image is how you hold yourself on stage, what you wear on stage, how you present yourself in interviews, your artwork, your music videos, your website, absolutely everything comes together to formulate your image. And just like you and I would have gone into a record store and picked up a great cover without even hearing the music, that's it stood out. I think you need to stand out more than ever online, just so that they'll give you 5 minutes of their attention to listen to your stuff. And again, if you don't have the tunes to back it up, well, you know, the consumer will let you know by not buying it or not consuming it or downloading it or streaming it or whatever. But I tell my students and I tell my clients that I think you need to really strategically think about what's going to make you stand out from the other 1,000 artists who are just as good as you, particularly at the start of your career when no one knows who the fuck you are.
Do you think that do you think the old concepts of an album and EP and whatnot are a bit of a dying concept, as far as especially moving into sort of a digital world now?
I think it's genre specific.
Yeah, okay.
So I think if you're still playing rock or metal or country or you know, those sort of more traditional type genres, I think you should still be definitely considering physical.
Yep.
But yeah, if you're doing you know, trap, electronica, hip hop or something, then maybe, or dance, or, you know, maybe it's not. Maybe it's you know, your target audience, they just want to press the SoundCloud button or the Spotify stream, and that's how they want to consume you. So
that's right. Okay, so yeah, and I mean you have to stereotype in a way, and you have to think about who your listener is and,
yeah,
and what they look like, and
yep.
In sort of corporate marketing world, they profile their person,
exactly
who it is. They're, you know, they're a 33-year-old single mother that
exactly,
you know, has two kids and blah blah, and she listens to this and she likes these type of movies and whatever
exactly
it is. So from a music point of view, you've got to try and profile that person right down to the T as much as you can.
But you could do that. I mean, yeah, if you the next time you're on stage at a Lord show, you could look out and say, okay, who if I was to pick a stereotype of a Lord fan tonight,
I could do it.
It's probably a dude in a battle jacket who's about, you know, 30 and got long hair and Iron Maiden patches, and, you know, you could start building that picture potentially.
Yeah, absolutely. And then you sort of think on a wider scale, who are they during the week?
Yeah.
What do they do? What types of jobs do they have?
Yep.
What sort of TV shows do they watch?
Yep.
What's their favourite movies?
Yep.
What's the pop culture look like for them? And then that's where you sort of then start to get really sort of, I guess, smart about your marketing as to how you market the music to them to make it identifiable for them.
Yeah, that's right. And that's some of the stuff we talk about in the classroom when we go a bit deeper, you know, like, because the average musician's not going to think like that or do that, but, you know, like, most bands I know don't even have a mailing list. Does Lord have a mailing list? Are you collecting email addresses at all your shows?
No, we don't collect them at shows, which we should do. But I've got a mailing list that I just pull out of existing store,
yep,
and people that I've collected or contacted us over the years. But as far as new people, yeah, absolutely. I see it all the time in our band. There's so many things that we know we should do, we don't do.
Yeah.
For various reasons.
Yeah,
so most
absolutely.
Is probably laziness and...
It's so busy as well.
Well, that's it. And then, especially when you're playing a show and you've got to actually physically play the show, and then you've got to make sure that things are set up and all the aesthetics, and one of the guys in the band's got to sit behind the merch table all night or rotate,
yep,
or we got to try and convince someone and give them $50 to sit behind the table and sell a merch. And, but
what about on your website? Do you have a lead capture thing where you say, hey, here's the new Lord song, just give us your email address and it's yours for nothing?
No.
You know, this is the sort of, this is where it's all headed, so.
Well, okay, this leads into my next thing, and I'll keep it on the time. I won't go for too much longer. I've got a couple of things to throw out there, but so Lord Exclusive, we haven't announced anything yet, but we're going to put out a live album soon.
Yep.
And it's going to be audio and video.
Yep.
And we're at that crossroads, and we were talking about this before we started recording, about difference of opinions as to how we should release it. And we're looking at streaming, we're looking at tangible product, and we know that the market's ever-changing all
yep.
the time, and more people are moving over to sort of digital content.
Yep.
We've got the content, we know what it looks like. From your expertise and your point of view,
mm-hmm.
What would be your opinion as to the best way to put out a live album in this day and age?
Okay. Well, again, you got to remember, I'm just a failed heavy metal drummer. But as someone who, you know, talks to a lot of people who are successful and studies a lot of the trends that are happening, I would say you definitely got to be on all of the digital platforms.
Yep.
So you'd get yourself... the best digital aggregator you can. I would recommend a particular Australian one. I really liked Sarah Hamilton from Ditto. She's a friend of mine. I like that because you become a bit bigger of a, a bigger fish in a smaller pond when you're working with her.
Okay.
And she'll get all your songs on all of the platforms, you know, the Spotify's and the Google Play's and the Apple Music's and all the other ones that are there. So I think you definitely have to have that as a presence. But for you guys, with your back catalogue and, you know, your great longevity in your band, which is admirable, you'd want to be doing definitely physical product. I'd be going to your fans and asking them, you know, going to that, asking them for surveys. But instinctively, I reckon you could move some vinyl units because of your audience being the collector heavy metal guy, especially if the artwork's killer and, you know, but also CD. And music videos, I think, are really important. That I mean, you guys have always had great music videos.
Yep.
Your Kylie Minogue cover is still one of the greatest things I've ever seen in my life.
Film that down around the corner there as well.
Yeah. I still show students that when we study music video.
Is that where all those plays are coming from? Great.
Thank you. But yeah, look, that's the sort of thing I'd be doing. But then I'd also be doing some premium stuff for you guys, because I reckon you'd have some super fans. Yep. What do you reckon?
Yeah, absolutely.
So, you know, I mean, you take Tim Charles and the Obliviscaris, copped a lot of shit for the Patreon type of thing. I'm not saying you necessarily have to go that far. But by simply offering something more, you would have a fan that buys your shirt and buys your album and buys your CD and streams you and does everything he can.
Yep.
And if he had the opportunity to invest in you further, he probably would.
Yeah.
Whether that's Lord comes to his lounge room and does an acoustic set for, you know, $5,000, where he gets all his mates around on his 40th birthday or something.
Yep.
That's the kind of thing that a lot of bands go, I can't fucking do that. That's prostituting myself or whatever. Mm. But it comes down to whether you want Lord to be a bit of this part-time thing that you do on the weekends when you're not working, or if you actually want it to try and become something more sustainable that, you know, you can say, well, I can make my mortgage repayments this month without having to go and do this job that is average at best.
Yeah, absolutely. Really quickly, and we'll try and brush over this without going down the rabbit hole, but from the crowdfunding point of view, and yeah, Tim Charles through Neo have been incredibly successful in their ventures in that market.
Highly criticised,
but at the same time, they were successful, and I think that sort of speaks louder than the criticism, because in the end, there's been an audience that's been willing to invest in it.
Totally.
And
totally.
Good on them for being successful in that, right? One thing that I've been pushing the band is using crowdfunding, not so much to crowdfund for the project that you're working on, but rather to use it as a pre-order platform with additional incentives. So spinning it in a way that, yeah, you are utilising a platform that's been perceived as asking your fans for money, but it's more of a management platform where it's collating the emails, it's collating the data of these people.
Yep.
It's getting money up front, which helps.
Absolutely.
And it also then opens up the opportunities for things such as, you know, the concept of going to someone's house and doing an acoustic show, or giving them signed stuff for old merchandise as limited edition, or whatever it might be that you've got lying around that your diehard might not have access to.
Totally.
So I'm trying to push that one.
One of the episodes of my podcast, which I've got sitting there, which is going to be released, is with Benji Marshall, who's the... is his last name Marshall? I might have stuffed that up. Benji, I'm just going to say
NRL.
Benji. No. Benji from Pledge Music.
Oh, yeah, okay, all right. Yeah.
Not Marshall. I've forgotten his name, which is embarrassing.
That was a footballer, wasn't it?
Yes.
Benji Marshall?
Yeah, anyway.
Okay.
But anyway,
yeah.
And he talked about that. He's saying, you know, by using Pledge, and you should go check out Pledge, I would endorse him after talking to him. Exactly what you just said is that, you know, you can go to your fans and go, look, this is coming.
Yeah.
What would you guys be interested in? And you can survey them and ask them. And, you know, if no one ticks that vinyl box, or only a few do, then you don't do it, you know?
Yeah.
Whereas if, you know, you get 300 ticks, you go, okay, well, maybe it's worth doing that 500 run, because we've already pre-sold 300. Over time, we'll sell, you know, the last 200 off our website and through shows and stuff. But that kind of thing. And again, yeah, mining that data from people. I mean, I think what bands have to do, which where there's a lot of resistance from traditional musicians, is you've got to treat it like a business, you know? If you want to, unless you just want to do it for a hobby, then do it as for fun.
That's it. I mean, you know, if you're happy to sit at home in your bedroom and keep writing music and you don't really care whether anyone listens or not, then more power to you. But if you're doing that exact same thing and then whinging online that no one gives a shit, then then there might be some self-talk that's needed, and a bit of additional education that's needed to.
I think most musicians want to be listened to, and that's easier than ever. But it's monetizing. That's where it comes in. You know, it's about learning how to monetize your art, and knowing that if you're half decent, and you don't have to be good, but if you're popular, if you can, if you've got some level of popularity, then people will be happy to exchange their cash for what you offer them. Mm. And that's a basic business principle, that if you deliver something that is in demand, people will happily, you know, purchase that exchange, which benefits you, they're happy. And again, what I'd be saying to you is to think about those people that go, shit, I wish they had another t-shirt design, because I'd buy that as well, or I wish they had something else that they could go up to, you know?
Mm.
And that's only something I've learned relatively recently, and in my experience, is that if you can really pump the value into it, if you can really make this, like, irresistible, this offer, 90% of people might go, well, no, that's too much, or I don't see the value in it, but there'll be 10% of people that go, yep, all right, let's do it. Let's pay that premium price for this premium product.
And that's all you need. I mean, it's, you know, if working on percentages, it's like the 80-20 rule, you know, and you only need that 20%.
Totally.
And they're going to fund the majority of your band. And the other 80% of your casual fans that come in and out and they buy the bare minimum, they might just buy a t-shirt and download everything for free, or they might just buy the CD and that's it.
Yep.
Or they might just be the guy that rocks up to the show and pays the door entry and that's it. But
that's it.
You rely on those hardcore fans. It's a small percentage, but they outlay a lot and invest a lot to keep the band going.
Yeah.
So you got to look after them.
Yep, that's absolutely.
They're your biggest asset.
One of my my mates and now mentors is a guy who played in a metal band called Cryogenic. You know, Steve Esser?
Yeah, yeah.
Multimillionaire now, and he's running his business exactly like that.
Yeah, he's doing, is it IT or something along those lines, or no?
No, he's doing online products and services.
Yeah, right.
And physical as well. He does events, and, you know, I used to tour with Cryogenic and Steve, and, you know, he was always the party guy and the prankster, and he was always a funny and a smart guy and a charismatic guy. But if you go to one of his events, it's unbelievable.
You wouldn't pick it? You wouldn't have picked it back then, like, to see what he's doing now?
Not that I wouldn't pick it. It just blows me away how much money he makes.
Yeah.
You know?
I'll have to hit him up and pick his brain on the podcast sometime.
Absolutely. If you see him coming to town one day and doing his business presentation, go and watch him, because it's a sight to behold. But
I think it's just a good example to show that you can't be defined by what you do and what you love. You can make any decision you want to make, and you don't have to worry about perception or whatever. You create your own reality. And going back to the smokes and mirrors and things as well, about how you display yourself online, and marketing is so important. I mean, you know,
really
he doesn't
is.
Have to be defined by the dude that played in the metal band. I mean, I'm sure that he probably uses a little bit of that as context in some of the things that he talks about.
He told me he said all of his stuff that he failed in the band is transferred across to the business to make sure he didn't fuck up the business.
Right? I love it. That's really good. Okay, so keeping on the time, and we're slowly getting roasted in the sun, which is ridiculous because it's the middle of winter. So this is going to come out in about a month's time.
Yeah.
What's on the horizon? What can people see coming out of the music business facts world or Rodney Holder world?
Good question. Good question. Well, I am going to ramp up my podcast and get all my podcasts out that I haven't been releasing that I've got sitting in the bank, which, again, very valuable stuff, all free. And really just to do that, just for that reason, you know, to say, here's, you know, come and listen to my shit and hopefully learn something. I've got my new podcast on the horizon, which again is a very much a personal journey that I'm going to go on, and I'm looking forward to that, with the lesser goal, but still no lesser goal, that I'd maybe be able to monetize that down the track. The webinar business is absolutely flying for me, so I'm going to be doing more of that, and I'm going to be doing it in a variety of different niches. So I'm speaking to people who are experts in making money in real estate, or experts who are doing bodybuilding as vegans, and, you know, just all this really interesting stuff, niche stuff that I'm interested in. And I think creating content and putting out value to the world, and hopefully leaving some kind of little legacy when you're no longer here.
Oh, like-minded. I love it. We'll have to talk more, because that's really cool. That's right up my alley. It's really, really interesting. So I'll have all the links and stuff in the show notes so people can check it out and subscribe to Music Business Facts and then go and check out all your resources, and I'm sure that there'll be webinars and all sorts of stuff that'll pop up in the future as those opportunities arise as well.
See, this is what you should be doing. Can I give it a plug?
Yeah.
So I've got like a free report.
Yep.
And so what that is, it's what they call a lead magnet.
Yep.
So I'm going to give something away. So my free report is basically a lecture that I stole from one of Australia's greatest managers, John Watson.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And John came up with this great formula for what successful musicians have.
Yep, okay.
And it's amazing. Like, you go through it and you go, okay, yeah, there is a formula for success. So I took his formula for success and put it into a free report, which you can get at musicbusinessfacts.com /free report. And in exchange to get that report, you have to give me your email address so that I can mark it to you, see? And now, of course, you can unsubscribe and never hear from me again, but I'm hoping that you read that free report and you go, yeah, that's really fucking good. That's like kind of, I already knew that, but to actually hear that one of Australia's top managers says this is the formula, hopefully people want to then hear from you again. And so that's the kind of stuff bands should be doing, I reckon.
It's a bit of helpful marketing.
Yeah.
You know, totally. Throw some stuff out there. Or what do they call it? The ascending platform, where you bring them in with some free content, and then over time you build a rapport and relationship, and then eventually that may lead to monetization down the track.
That's totally right.
Love it.
Totally right.
All right, I think that's a good way to end it off. Thanks so much for your time.
Andy, thanks for inviting me, mate. It's been an honour to speak to you. I was very happy that you asked me.
Oh, pleasure. Thank you.
Take care, mate. Yeah.
Thanks, everyone. If you want to reach out to Rodney, you can do so via the show notes over at andysocial.net. I'll put links to everything that we spoke about over there. So if you want to dive a little bit deeper into Rodney's world, I'll have as much info on there as possible, just so you've got a great starting point to really sort of learn a lot more about everything that Rodney's involved with. I'd like to highlight in particular Rodney's podcast, Music Business Facts. If you're a muso or you're someone that works in the music industry, or hell, like you're a music fan and you want to understand a bit more about the mechanics of how the industry works, everything behind the scenes, this is a really, really cool podcast to listen to. I cannot recommend it enough. Rodney has an array of guests on, really famous musicians, promoters, band managers, people from all facets of the industry. It's a really, really informative and at times an eye-opening podcast. It's really, really cool. I learned a lot listening to it. And I think it was probably one of the first podcasts I ever listened to when I started getting into podcasts. It's been around for a while now. So highly, highly recommended. Everything will be in the show notes over at andysocial.net. So if you want to check out how to listen to that, I assume that if you're listening to this podcast, you'll know how to find Music Business Facts. But nonetheless, it'll be over at andysocial.net. Now, before we wrap things up, if you want to support this podcast, listening to it is the best way of doing it. So thank you so much to everyone that's been listening. If you want to do a little bit more, sharing, liking, tagging, commenting, all that sort of social media stuff always helps. I also have an Amazon portal link over at andysocial.net and a paypal.me link over at the website as well. So if you want to support and want to do a little bit more, you can go over to the website and use those functions to support this podcast. That's it, guys. Thank you so much. Another great podcast in the bag. I have some really, really cool ones coming up. Thank you, as always, for supporting. Keep sharing it around. And if there's a podcast that one of your friends might like, pass it along. Load up this podcast in their podcast player, whatever it takes. But thank you very, very much. And we'll speak again next week. Bye-bye.